You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, and since it is another Friday, we have Matthew Stevens of Ravens Wire hanging with us here. Matthew, how are you doing today?
Oh, pretty good, man. How about yourself?
I am doing well, just ready for some more Ravens football. We're so close. Sunday is the day where the Ravens will take on the Cleveland Browns at M&T Bank Stadium in front of the home crowd. Matthew, I want to start off with the Week 3 game. I know that we're past it, and I know that the Chiefs are arguably the best team in the league, but there's just so much to take away from that game. Starting off with Lamar Jackson's performance, I want to get your perspective on it because it arguably was not his best performance throughout his first 11 career starts, 22 of 43 for 267 yards. He missed a few throws. He did wow with his legs on a few occasions, but overall with his throwing and his passing, what did you see out of Lamar?
Well, I think we saw what happens when a defense takes away, you know, his favorite guys. And that was Mark Andrews and that was Marquise Brown. You know, both guys who still got targeted a bunch, but were, you know, pretty much held down for most of the game. It forced him to look other places. And to be honest with you, he just wasn't entirely comfortable for the first half of the game, for the first, you know, two or three quarters potentially. But he eventually kind of got past it and settled down, and the game plan changed a little bit in the second half. And we saw a much better passer there at the end of the game. I think this is just, you know, a young kid who's played a total of 11 games, getting his legs underneath of him still.
And speaking of his legs, Lamar in practice on Wednesday said that he hates running. He would rather throw the ball. And some Ravens fans kind of got spooked by that. Like, oh my God, he's never going to run the ball again. Obviously, no, that is not the case. But do you think that with Lamar's preference being throwing, he just is trying to force throws in a little? And that's what we saw in that Kansas City game. Or do you think he's letting the game come to him a bit more?
I mean, I think he's letting the game come to him a little bit more. I think some of it's also, you know, he wants to prove critics wrong. As much as, you know, he's been very vocal about, you know, the fact that he puts a lot of the stuff on him, he's also been kind of one to point at a few times, like, you know, not bad for a running back, just small little things here, little quips here and there that, you know, kind of point to he wants to prove the doubters wrong. And some of that is then he needs to go ahead and become a better passer. So in turn, maybe he's orienting a little bit more that way than he is taking off and running with it. But to be honest with you, that's kind of a good thing for him, both short term and long term, is to be able to develop better as a passer, to get more comfortable doing that and not doing what he did last year, though it worked, which was, you know, I don't see anyone open immediately. I'm not comfortable with this. I'm going to make a play myself. He can't continue to do that throughout the rest of his career, as Cam Newton will assuredly tell him that.
Right. And I think that with Lamar wanting to be a thrower, that's going to open up the game for the receivers. But as we've seen over the first few weeks, it's really been the Marquise Brown and Mark Andrews show without really a second receiver or another tight end becoming a threat. That's really been a two-man game there. Who do you expect within these next couple weeks and as the season progresses to really step up and show that Lamar can trust them as a target? Maybe Lamar will start to look their way a bit.
Well, I think, you know, we have the obvious ones, which were, as you mentioned, Andrews and Marquise Brown. Outside of those guys, I think you start looking at guys like, you know, Willie Snead, who was there last year, certainly has quite a bit of time with Lamar so far. And then also the guy that I'm really big on, and actually wrote a little bit about him earlier today, is Miles Boykin. I think that's a guy that by the end of the season, he's fresh, he's big, he's capable of going ahead and doing a little bit of things against defenders that are probably tired, a little beat up in the second half of the season. I think that's when you really start to see him kind of come into his own this year as a rookie.
And speaking of being beat up a little bit, Mark Andrews did not practice for the second straight day yesterday with that foot injury. And people are starting to get a little bit concerned. Andrews didn't really look full strength against Kansas City. And with him missing 2 days of practice, he's been in this routine for a few weeks now. But the argument is starting to come up whether the Ravens should just rest Andrews for a week or two and get him fully healthy, because Ravens fans and the Ravens especially would like to have him for the full season instead of having him for a few more games here and then missing him. So what's your prognosis on the Andrews injury? I know you're not a doctor, but based off what you've heard, is that a serious thing that Ravens fans should be concerned about?
I think somewhat. You know, if you look at the last 2 weeks, the last two injury reports, you know, Andrews missed a practice and was kind of worked back into the lineup. This is the first time that he's kind of missed his, he's missed multiple practices there, at least in 1 week. So that is somewhat concerning, and obviously it's a foot injury. If you've ever played football, foot injuries don't disappear. You're on them constantly. You're constantly running. You do a lot with your feet, and feet tend to kind of hold on to those injuries a little bit longer. You know, that's one that will probably linger for a good portion of the season, if not the full season. That being said, he's been productive through three games, largely speaking. So if he's able to go ahead and suit up and play, I'm not terribly worried about it. But I think you have a good point, which is maybe you go ahead and rest him at some point. You have a bye week coming up in the next few weeks, but maybe this week, maybe next week or the week after is the time where you go, you know what? We got two other tight ends. We're good right now.
Yeah, and I think that this game against Cleveland is very important, I will say. So maybe they play him this week and then decide, all right, with an arguably lesser opponent coming up next week, maybe we'll play him in the more important game and then give him a little rest in the other game. But moving over to the defense, Matthew, I want to ask you in that Kansas City game, what you saw out of the secondary. I know it really wasn't pretty, but overall, what was your prognosis of the secondary and how can they get better this week against Cleveland?
Well, the one thing that I noticed in looking through some of the big plays were just miscommunications yet again. There was one specific play, I believe Hardman, on that 80-plus yard pass. Maurice Kennedy lines up against him initially, but then he goes ahead and shades off to the outside. Looks like he's either in zone coverage or he was expected to go ahead and switch coverage with, I believe, Anthony Averett. Averett stays on his guy on the outside, and then ultimately Hardman's left completely wide open. No one's covering him. Tony Jefferson then has to go ahead and come over, try to make the play. It looks like ultimately it's Tony Jefferson's fault when you look at it, in real time. When you start looking at that, though, you start going, all right, well, that sounds a lot more like Kennedy's problem or Averett's problem for not switching off coverage there, which, is to somewhat be expected. You're missing a bunch of starters. You got a bunch of guys who have not necessarily played a ton. That's going to happen. And I think eventually the way you get over that is by getting Jimmy Smith back. And we talked about it last week, potentially going ahead and trying to up your trade for a guy like Jalen Ramsey. Bring him in so that way you don't have to worry about the next man up. You have good guys sitting there to go ahead and withstand the rest of the season.
And Ramsey, speaking of, has had a whirlwind of a week with allegedly having the flu and then a back injury. Now he's in Nashville witnessing the birth of his second child, and they don't even know when he's coming back to the team. So that's a situation to monitor. I know the talks have died down, especially with the Jaguars wanting to keep him, but you're right. Maybe the Ravens do go out if Jimmy Smith recovers slower than expected or the secondary continues to falter. Maybe that's an avenue that the Ravens do explore. But Matthew, the last question I want to ask you before we get into the break here is about that pass rush. Tyus Bowser and Tim Williams were pretty much called out to the max by defensive coordinator Don Martindale, saying that they need to join the party. He said, for now, McPhee looks good, but he shouldn't be playing as many snaps as he has. Martindale said that McPhee feels good, but he shouldn't be playing that many snaps, and they want him to feel good as the season rolls on and moves on to November and December. So we all know Matthew Judon has been the prize of this pass rush, but what did you see in that game against Kansas City, and do you expect it to get better as the season goes on with what they have?
Well, I kind of called it out throughout the offseason. This is a team that did not really invest in outside linebackers. They didn't really invest in finding someone on the defensive line to go ahead and pass rush. So ultimately, they're stuck with what they're stuck with right now. And that is Matthew Judon and Pernell McPhee, who luckily seems to kind of have caught on here in Baltimore after quite a few seasons of not doing very much. But outside of that, that's pretty much your pass rush if you're looking at just the outside linebackers. That really ends up putting the emphasis on Don Martindale to create pressure via blitzes and unique coverages and trying to go ahead and group guys up different ways, which then puts further emphasis on the secondary to play man down or to play on an island when they shouldn't have to. It's not going to get better over the course of the season. It wasn't good last year, and they lost arguably their two best pass rushers without really replacing them. So, of course, it's not going to get any better. It does then turn to guys like Bowser and like Williams and Jalen Ferguson to start stepping up. You guys got to start making an impact. And if it weren't for the fact that realistically Baltimore doesn't have anyone outside linebacker outside of their starters, I don't think Bowser or Williams really would have made this team if this was last year's lineup.
Right, and a follow-up to that really quickly, you talk about players who didn't make the team. Willie Henry was one of those guys who on the interior was probably one of the Ravens' best pass rushers from the interior. He had 3.5 sacks in 2017 in 14 games, and then one sack in three games in 2018. Henry was injured for some of his Ravens career, but this raises the question, should the Ravens have moved on from Willie Henry?
Well, I think it's telling that he's not signed anywhere else. You know, looking at the transaction lists, you know, he's still currently speaking a free agent, which is not a good sign if you're a guy who was expected to break out this year. I mean, a lot of people were pegging him as being, you know, a Brandon Williams-esque type player that could go ahead and make that stride and potentially let Baltimore let Brandon Williams go in the next few years. To go from that to completely cut, that's a shock to the rest of the NFL, I'm sure. And again, there's a reason why he's not been signed so far anywhere else and he's not playing. That's telling. So should they have moved on from him? That's always arguable, but I think given the fact that 31 other teams haven't jumped on him means, yeah, probably.
That is true, and that was really the surprise cut for me. I came out of the blue, and I did not expect that to happen, but you're right. He hasn't been signed yet, and you're right telling that he hasn't been signed anywhere else. I expected him to at least be a rotational piece on a team that doesn't have a lot of defensive line depth, maybe a team like the Dolphins or whatnot, but not even that for Willie Henry, so interesting developments there, but we are going to go to break, and when we come back, we're going to get into our game preview, the Browns at the Ravens, so stay tuned for that, and we will be right back. But before we do that, with Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer for just our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/lockedon to try it for free for 7 days and save 25% off of your new subscription. Also, at the end of a hard week, it's great to sit down, take some time off, and watch some football. Game-winning touchdowns on two-minute drives, running backs racing down the sidelines with no one to stop them. There's nothing else like the NFL, and there's no better way to make the games even more exciting than to bet on them. So do the smart thing, go to mybookie.a-g. No one gives you more ways to win than they do. MyBookie's got the fastest payouts and better lines than any other sportsbook. Join now, MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON. Visit mybookie.a-g today. You play, you win, and you get paid.
Welcome back, everybody, to Locked On Ravens. Matthew Stevens still with us here. And Matthew, let's just dive right into this Browns game because it's a big one. It has a lot of implications down the road where if the Browns and Ravens are in a dogfight for the AFC North, the winner of this game could take the whole division. So let's start off with the quarterback battle, the first overall pick in the 2018 draft, and then the last pick in the first round of the 2018 draft, Baker Mayfield versus Lamar Jackson. Who do you think has the better game?
I think Lamar Jackson by a long shot. I mean, you look at three games so far, Jackson has yet to throw an interception. I'm going to knock on wood for that. But that being said, you look at Baker Mayfield, he has 3 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. After three games, people have kind of started to figure out what you've got going on this season and are able to go ahead and shut that down. And, you know, Cleveland right now is wondering what's up with Baker Mayfield and how to fix that and what they can go ahead and do. There's a lot of problems over there. So it's a huge story. It's a huge kind of thing to get into. But, you know, Mayfield isn't quite having the season that everyone expected him to. Jackson is having a season that everyone really kind of expected maybe for Mayfield this year. So if we're going off history off the last three games, it's Lamar Jackson by a landslide here.
Sticking with the offense for this entire segment, I think it's important to talk about the game flow because, as you mentioned, Lamar Jackson is kind of letting the game come to him. The coaches are understanding the game flow. And so in a game where the Browns defense is a little banged up in the secondary with Denzel Ward and Greedy Williams being absent in practice as well as Demaryius Randle, the Browns have a good defensive line. So I'd assume that the Browns would be playing the run here and trying to force the Ravens into some bad plays on the ground where Lamar could maybe expose them through the air. So do you think this is a throwing game for Lamar, or do you think the Ravens are going to try to run the ball?
I think they tried to go ahead and set the tone early. You know, if you're Baltimore, again, you know this is a game that's probably going to come down to the wire. You look at the two games last year, they came within 3 points. One was an overtime game. One took, you know, the final play of the final drive to go ahead and win. So, you know, this is going to be one that's probably going to go to the whistle. You want to go ahead and wear them down initially. You want to go ahead and batter them with a guy like Mark Ingram and Gus Edwards. Then by the second half, then that's when the passing game maybe can get a little bit more underneath of it when a defense is kind of maybe expecting you to continue to pound the rock. Or, you know, if things are going well there, you just keep going with it. You just keep pounding Ingram right up the middle, and you try to go ahead and stop the pass rush that's going to happen when Cleveland's sending guys like Garrett and Vernon off the edges.
And I think that was one of the concerns with the Ravens play calling last week, because the run game was working and then the Ravens kind of moved away from it and started to throw the ball. Then they started to come back to the run and started working again. So I think that if it's working, just stick with it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, the famous saying. So I think you're 100% right, and I totally agree with you. But sticking with the running backs, Mark Ingram at 16 carries, Gus Edwards 7, Justice Hill 1. It's kind of looking like Mark Ingram is taking over on that workhorse role. He's obviously not the full workhorse, but Gus Edwards has seen a few less carries than I expected. What do you expect Gus Edwards' role to be, not only for this game, but as the season progresses?
I kind of expect him to be the 1-2 punch, the two portion of that 1-2 punch for a guy like Mark Ingram. You know, going into the season, Ingram has not always been the healthiest guy down the line. You have a guy like Edwards who essentially fills very much the same role. He's a bigger back. He's able to go ahead and run more inside than outside. You have the outside being Lamar Jackson and a guy like Justice Hill. So really, you're just kind of using Edwards as a complement to Ingram in order to keep him fresh over the season. I mean, there's a reason why he has 43 carries compared to Gus Edwards' 27 versus just having 70 himself.
Right. And I think that Edwards also showed some prowess in the receiving game, 2 receptions for 15 yards. And I mentioned in a previous show that Edwards only had 2 receptions for 20 yards last season, the entirety of last season. So it's impressive to see how not only Lamar has grown, but also players like Gus Edwards. But speaking of receiving, we talked about it in the first segment. Who needs to emerge? And you talked about Willie Snead. You talked about Miles Boykin. Is this someone's coming out party this week, or do you expect it to be more of the same with Hollywood and Mark Andrews if he plays?
I'd kind of expect it to be a little bit more of the same, to be honest with you. I expect either Andrews or one of the other tight ends, probably Hayden Hurst, to continue going ahead and kind of busting up that seam. Again, especially when you're talking about a team like the Browns, who have a really solid, really talented defense, but necessarily aren't putting things together the right way. The best way to go ahead and attack that is those weird transition points, like we kind of talked about with Baltimore and them having struggling with that. The seam is the best way to continue attacking those transition points. So it's going to be tight ends primarily. You're going to go ahead and get the ball into the fastest guy on the field, Sands, which is going to be Marquise Brown, especially if a guy like Denzel Ward isn't able to play. He's also on the injury report still, as banged up and didn't play last week. If that's the case, man, I Brown one-on-one on the outside. Oh, fantastic. I hope that's what we see all game long. So if that's the case, then I think they continue to go with that type of thing, and then maybe go ahead and throw Snead or Roberts or Boykin inside, but they're not going to go ahead and fix what isn't broken. And right now they have the league leading offense in total yards. They have the most points in the league right now. There's no point to go ahead and change the script completely if you don't have to.
Hollywood Brown one-on-one on the outside, give me that all day. I'd expect more of the same as well. I mean, looking at the tight ends, it's like Lamar Jackson's security blanket, and Lamar is proving that when he has talent around him, he can do a lot of great things. But he also showed at Louisville that he can do things without that talent as well. I mean, there was a point brought up a few days ago that Baker Mayfield had Hollywood Brown and Mark Andrews, and Kyler Murray had a few of the same, and it's just like Lamar didn't have that luxury, and he's showing that when you put talent around him, he can do some special things. But it's also just telling to see that what he did at Louisville was really without a lot of talent. But finally, Matt, before we head into break here, I want to talk about the offensive line, because that's going to be where the Ravens are going to have to win in order for this offense to really be able to show their full potential and score a lot of points. The Browns have a scary defensive line: Miles Garrett, Sheldon Richardson, Olivier Vernon, just to name a few of those guys. How do you expect the Ravens offensive line to deal with those stud players?
Well, I think they're going to have to keep a guy in, whether it be a running back. That would be my biggest guess, would be keep a guy like Ingram in, so that way you can ship someone, like Vernon or Garrett, if they're able to go ahead and make their way around your tackles. The other big thing is really just asking especially the tackles, to contain, just keep things going. And then also to kind of switch over to maybe a quicker passing attack if they really are generating a lot of pressure. Again, you just like we had said with everybody else, you have who you have at this point along the offensive line. There's not much you can ultimately do outside of just winning your one-on-one matchups. Maybe, again, keeping a guy in just to buy you another half second, another second, and just trying to get the ball out as quickly as possible. So a lot of it's just really going to have to do with everyone else stepping up their game and the offensive line doing hopefully what we saw in week one, which is, you know, hold pat.
I mean, overall, I think this is going to be a great game for this Ravens offense, especially with the Browns secondary a bit banged up. We've seen what the Ravens can do against NFL talent, and I think that with the Browns, it's going to be more of the same. But we are going to head into break now, but when we come back for our final segment, we're going to be talking about the defense and what to expect from the secondary, the linebackers, and more. So we will be right back. Welcome back to Locked On Ravens. Matthew Stevens still with me, Kevin Ostreicher here, and we are going to start off, Matthew, by talking about the defensive line with Brandon Williams, Michael Pierce, Chris Wormley, Pat Ricard, all guys who have impressed to some degree but haven't gotten the pass rush that the Ravens have been looking for. The run defense looks solid, but overall, what has been your impression of this Ravens defensive line, and how can they stop Nick Chubb?
Well, I think they've done decently, and I think we've talked about this before, in that this is not a defensive line that is asked to generate any pass rush. If they get it, fantastic, but really they're just kind of asked to hold steady, to keep the line, to stay at the line of scrimmage, and allow the linebackers to scrape down and do what they need to do. And they've done fairly solidly at that so far. I mean, there's not a whole lot of guys into the second level in running plays. A lot of what we've seen so far, I mean, outside of this Chiefs game, and even that, a lot of it was more on the outside linebackers, the cornerbacks and the inside linebackers not kind of stepping up and making tackles. But the defensive line really weren't allowing guys to hit the second level or to muddy things up any. When we're seeing runs inside especially, we're seeing them go for very few yards, which is exactly what you're hoping to see, you know, out of this defensive line. It's exactly what you're asking for. And it's helped, which has also helped the pass rush in its own way by allowing guys to skirt in, whether it be Judon or McPhee, whether it be, you know, the linebackers, whether it be a safety blitz, whether, you know, one of those types of things that allows Martindale to kind of scheme his way into pressure by having a defensive line that he knows he could put three guys up there, go, you got the job, and the rest of the guys I can go ahead and play around with to play chess.
And speaking of Don Martindale's scheme, how do you expect him to really dial up blitzes that confuse Baker Mayfield, get him rattled at the line, and put pressure on him throughout this game?
Well, it's going to be through coverages, in my opinion. I think, you know, Mayfield has maybe felt some ghosts of pressure rather than pressure itself. And some of that has had to do with the fact that the offensive line has not played very well for him so far. So he's kind of got the, we saw the same thing with Joe Flacco, Kyle Bowler had the same effect, where you get hit often enough, eventually you assume you're going to get hit once the kind of, your clock hits a certain point. You're going, I'm just expecting the hit, so I need to get rid of it. And that hasn't always been the case for him. He hasn't always had to get rid of it. So I think a lot of it's just going to be with coverage. You're able to jam those guys at the line of scrimmage. You're able to go ahead and take away that initial read. Mayfield's going to get spooked, and he's going to go ahead and throw a pass that he shouldn't be throwing. I think that's the big thing primarily. And you just continue doing what you have been doing, which is getting Judon, you know, get him on the edge against a guy that you're able to beat. Looks like Justin McCray is going to be the right tackle in this game. That's precisely what I would want to see. So I think that's going to be primarily it. And then you go ahead and shoot the occasional safety or the occasional cornerback in there just to mess with Baker a little bit and make him think that he sees what's happening. And then you suddenly shift it on him. Don't let him get comfortable in terms of being able to diagnose what you're going to be able to do. I think that's the best way to do it. It's just play head games with him.
I think that a key proponent of that is just the communication. We talked about it with the secondary, but also with the linebackers. Patrick Owusu had a few issues with it on Sunday against the Chiefs. So overall, what's been your impression of Patrick Owusu and this inside linebacking group that is trying to recover from the loss of CJ Mosley?
You know, Ravens fans, for whatever reason, just like despised Mosley, and I still never will understand why. Yeah, he wasn't great covering Le'Veon Bell, but there are maybe a handful of linebackers, inside linebackers that could do that. So that was just an unfair comparison to begin with. But you know, these guys are doing well trying to substitute in for CJ Mosley, but Mosley did everything pretty well. He was a guy who was able to come down into the run game and make solid tackles consistently. He was a guy who was able to hit the edge and you know, settle things down that way. And we saw it against the Chiefs. for whatever reason, Baltimore does not cover the flats at all. They just don't. Mosley was able to go ahead and find his way over there either by diagnosing it early enough or by just having the speed and agility to make him make a move over there and to still make the play. Young, Owosu, and Board just haven't really kind of done that yet. They're still young. They're still trying to find their legs underneath them, for that matter. So some of it's to be expected, but they have not played terribly well. And some of the issues have been largely in coverage, which is, again, an issue with the safeties and the cornerbacks and those weird transition points. So it's a mix all over, but they just have not done terribly well.
I think also talking about communication, we talked about it with the secondary, and with the Browns having Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, and a few other threats in that receiving game, you have to be a little worried that if the Ravens can't get their communication down within the secondary, it might be another long game with Odell Beckham running slants. He kills people on slants. Who do you think in the secondary needs to step up with Odell and Jarvis Landry on the opposite side?
Well, I think the easy one would be the safeties. You're looking at, you know, Earl Thomas, who's done well, but has not been necessarily exceptional. And a lot of that has been other people's mistakes. But Ed Reed used to be able to come in and kind of make everyone better simply by going, fine, if you're not going to do it, I could be there in a flash and I'll make the play. Earl Thomas hasn't necessarily done that. And some of that is probably just he's still new to the scheme. He's still new to everything that's going on and to these players. So it takes time. The other guy is Tony Jefferson, who's also not done very well either. Coverage was never his strong suit, but in a game like this, if Odell Beckham Jr. wants to come across the middle, catch a quick slant, Tony Jefferson needs to go ahead and make him wish he was back in New York. You do that one or two times, Odell's going to be a little bit less eager to reach out for those passes. And if you can generate some type of a pass rush on Baker Mayfield, those passes aren't going to be right to the breadbasket either. So I think that's what you need to do. You need to go ahead and cater to those things a little bit better. I also want to see Chuck Clark, who's, you know, the other strong safety, plays a little bit of strong, plays a little bit of linebacker, plays a little bit of free safety. I want to see him step his game up. He's the guy that's kind of being expected to maybe take over in the next few years. Back there, he's a guy that needs to go ahead and do a little bit of those things a little bit more consistently. And we saw it last week against the Chiefs. He was put in there in coverage against Travis Kelce. That's a tough task to do, but he did reasonably well. I want to see him go ahead and take out, you know, the middle of that field. Again, there's transition points I keep talking about. Clark is going to be the guy that I think is the one that you want to go ahead and put in there because he has experience as in that secondary to be able to transition out a little easier, to know when to cut off, and to hopefully not leave any guys wide open.
And speaking of players who might be looked at to take over in the future in that defensive backfield, Deshaun Elliott is a guy that I am so high on. I talked about him like all throughout my first week. I think that he's going to be an exceptional player in this league, but I haven't really seen him on the field defensively. I've seen Brendan Trewick get snaps, Levine, Chuck Clark, as you mentioned. What happened to Deshaun Elliott? He seemed to have a very strong preseason, and he hasn't really translated that to the regular season.
Well, I think when I saw Elliott throughout the offseason, throughout training camp in preseason, a lot of it is he plays with intensity, plays with aggression, which you love. Again, just like I was mentioning with Tony Jefferson, I want a guy that's, if you're going to come across the middle, I want to make sure you don't remember what you had for lunch for the last 3 days. That's what you want out of a guy like that, and he does that well. However, he's not really all that good in coverage, if we're being completely honest. That's not his strong suit. He still needs to learn those things, and I think they're not going to put him out there until he has a little bit more comfort and can show that he's able to go out there and cover, whether it be one-on-one or whether it be bracket coverage. He needs to go ahead and do that and diagnose plays a little better than what we kind of maybe saw him do even throughout the preseason.
Yeah, and I think that if he gets that all together, I mean, he already has the physical tools. You mentioned his aggressiveness and intensity. I think those are the tools in the making for a strong safety in the league. But he plays free safety, but I think he could really be a hybrid playing either one of those positions. But Matthew, my last question for you is your final score prediction. What do you think the outcome of this game is going to be?
I've done a few different scores like I do every week, and as the week goes on, we'll probably change it even more. But I think, 27-24, this is going to be a close game. As much as everyone likes to rag on the Browns, they are absolutely full of talent, and that gets you somewhere. It doesn't necessarily get you wins, but it gets you close. And if you look at the last two games they've had, they've been close, even including against the game against the Los Angeles Rams. They brought them to the limit, too. That's tough. They haven't been able to go ahead and get over the hump, and I think that's more a leadership issue and a consistency issue. But, man, are they so full of talent that Baltimore cannot sleep on them from the fact that the secondary is able to go ahead and bolster up in the red zone, force them to kick field goals all game long, while Baltimore's offense is able to march down the field a few more times and just find the end zone with a little bit more consistency.
Yeah, and I 100% agree with you. This Browns team has too much talent not to put it all together. It's really just a matter of when. And obviously, I hope it's not this week, but eventually they're going to. And I believe the Ravens will also win this game. I think it's by a touchdown, 30-23. I was only 2 points off of my score prediction last week. I said 35-28 Chiefs. It was 33-28 Chiefs. So maybe I'll get it on the dot this week, and hopefully I do. I mean, a Ravens win is a win, but I think that you're right. The secondary is going to bolster up, and they're mad. I mean, they are appalled with the way they've been playing, and they know they can play better. And I think that with veteran leadership in that locker room, like Earl Thomas, Tony Jefferson, they're letting the young guys know. And I think they also know that some of that fault is on themselves as well. So I think this is a key game for the secondary to step up, show the Ravens and show the Ravens fans that this is a legit secondary and a legit defense. But Matthew, that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Be sure to follow him on Twitter. Be sure to look at Ravens Wire because we are both on there. So Matthew, just thank you again for joining the show.
Oh man, thanks for having me again. Always love doing it.
Wonderful. We are going to take a 2-day break here until Monday, but when we get back on Monday, we're going to do our full game breakdown of the Browns and Ravens. What happened? Who stepped up? Who didn't? What it means for the NFL and for the Ravens. So stay tuned for that, and I will see you on Monday.